Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I love the quote from that promo. In the time of Chopin, everything was pop. Evening Music with David Garland and Terrence McKnight. They're so great. If you don't hear the music side of WNYC, tune in every night at 7. We will get two views now on the morality of the Gaza war. First, from the Israeli side, with Zev Chaifetz, former Israeli government official, now a journalist here in New York and author of books including Match Made in Heaven about Israel and the Christian Right. Zev, thank you for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
Israel is killing hundreds of people, many of them civilians, with this war, while Hamas can only fire rockets across the border that are killing few and recently killing no one. Is it moral to use such overwhelming force and kill so many civilians?
Are you asking me if that is that a question?
That's a question.
I don't even understand it as a question. I mean,
so much of the world is raising that question.
Well, the part of the world that's raising the question is mostly that part of the world which is inclined to have a negative answer about Israel, whatever the question is. But if the question is, in a war, do you try to beat the other side, and is killing an aspect of war, those are both yes. Is this a moral war? I'm not sure I'm a great enough moralist. I think that both sides have their own moral codes. I think the Islamic radical moral code is not mine to explain or even to understand. But from my point of view, Israel has to, you know, kill the fewest number of people while accomplishing what it has to accomplish, which is to prevent Israel from being permanently open season for missiles from the south of the country or from any place else.
But critics ask, this may be a war of self-defense since the goal is to stop the Hamas rocket fire. But is there no point where it becomes immoral simply to kill so many defenseless civilians, even though they're not being targeted, they're collateral damage, and sacrifice so many more Israeli soldiers than the Israelis being put at risk?
Yeah, I think at 2 points. At the point where the side that's doing the killing is enjoying it, I think that's immoral. And I think at the point where it's no longer necessary. In other words, when Hamas, or whoever it is, in this case Hamas, stops firing its missiles into Israel, and more than that, when it renounces its goal, its strategic goal, which is written in its charter and proclaimed in its mosques every day, of exterminating Israel. When those two things happen, then it will be immoral for Israel to take the life of a single person there. Until that happens, if there's a war, and evidently there is a war. I mean, it's clear from both sides feel that. I think it's stupid for the, frankly, morally stupid, if I can say so, and certainly logically stupid for the critics of Israel to expect that Israel will have as many casualties as the other side in order to make it proportional.
How many Israelis have been killed or injured by Hamas rocket fire since the all-out war began?
Every Israeli who lives in the bottom part of the country, in the southern part of the country, is injured emotionally, psychologically, every time a rocket goes off.
I've heard that the number actually killed is zero. Is that correct?
I hope so. I certainly hope it's zero. It's not because they're not trying to kill Israelis. They're shooting indiscriminately at Israelis. But the fact that they're inept at it doesn't mean that they're not shooting. And I certainly don't think that we ought to kill a number of our people just so that it'll be equal to the number of theirs. I think that is an illogical request.
I'm going to play a clip of Rami Khoury, the Lebanese journalist, on this show the other day, talking about. Actually, you know what? Let me hold that Rami Khoury clip. But I'll ask you a couple of other questions first.
You're a smart guy, by the way, Rami.
Yeah. Well, Hamas broke the ceasefire. But even many who do not support Hamas say Israel was maintaining warlike conditions in Gaza during the ceasefire. And so let's play that Rami Khoury clip. He describes what was going on at the hands of Israel as he sees it before Hamas decided to end the ceasefire.
Israel did withdraw its settlers and its troops from Gaza, but it encircled it, it strangulated it, it kept assassinating people, and the war continued between Hamas and the Israelis. This was not a normal, peaceful situation. There are strong issues between them that have not been resolved, and Israel continued to have a stranglehold on the people of Gaza. You have about 60% of children in Gaza are anemic now, from the UN statistics. And anemia takes 2 or 3 years to develop, to have kids who are anemic and stunted, small for their size. So there's a big series of issues between Israel and the Gaza Strip and Hamas.
How do you react to that list of insults to the Gaza population, including what he called encircling it and strangulating it during the ceasefire period for a half a year, leading, he says, you know, to such hunger that there was anemia way on the rise among the children of Gaza?
Look, I don't know, and Rami Khoury doesn't know about the anemia. Those are UN statistics from UNRWA, and UNRWA since 1949 has been a Palestinian spokes organization. I hope that it's not true. As far as Rami said, and he's right, there's a war between Israel and Hamas. There was before the ceasefire. The ceasefire came to cease the fire of the previous fighting. And there will be a war, evidently, between Israel and Hamas until one of the sides changes its strategic desire. Hamas's strategic desire, well enunciated often and loudly and proudly, is the extermination of Israel. Israel's strategic desire is to have quiet on its southern border so it can live as a Jewish state. Those are the two desires. That's what the war is about. And you can go back to, you know, World War One, which is in the Hamas charter, where they say that the Jews started World War One and the Jews started World War Two, and the Jews controlled WNYC, and Brian Lehrer is a Zionist just like Zev Heifetz. You know, there's no end to this nonsense. The facts are that Israel is a sovereign country, and there's a bunch of people who are armed by the Iranians who are in the southern border who are shooting rockets into it, as many as they can, to kill as many civilians as possible. And at some time, Israel decided that it wouldn't agree to that happening anymore. It is using main force. And I would like to just add to that, I think that the Hamas people misunderstand Israel. They think that they're great students of Israel, but they misunderstand how completely Israel is not prepared for this to happen.
We looked up the stats, at least according to the BBC yesterday. Some 820 Gazans and 13 Israelis have reportedly died in 14 days of fighting. Medical staff, quoted by the BBC, I'm not sure whose medical staff, said 235 children were among the Palestinians dead. And the UN stopped humanitarian aid convoys the other day because they say Israel repeatedly promised to let the aid trucks go in unimpeded, then on various occasions attacked them. Is the UN lying? Is Israel doing something immoral in that instance?
I'm sure the UN is lying because the UN always lies. And by the way, according to the UN, they've renewed their convoys today. Is Israel lying? I don't know. Maybe. The fact of the matter is that Israel was the one that announced the 3 hours of medical and food supplies going in each day. Is this a perfect situation in terms of, are we all happy about it? No, we're not all happy about it. We're very unhappy about it. Is there going to be a body count carried out by the BBC and the UN? Yes, there sure will be, and it will. Its purpose is to make Israel look bad. Is Israel wrong in attacking Hamas when it hides among civilians? It's absolutely not wrong.
There's
no other way to deal with this.
There shouldn't be a body count by neutral agencies during any war?
Well, there should be. I'm all for it. Let's count them up. If that's the measure of international morality, let's count them up. I'm sure that by that standard, the United States was very wrong in World War II. I'm sure that by that standard, any time a democracy is fighting against its enemies, it's wrong, especially if it's more powerful than its enemies.
Before you go,
I think that's a bizarre standard of morality, and I think that it's usually imposed only on Israel.
Before you go, on the strategy and where this could lead, many observers say the war cannot succeed, even from Israel's point of view, because of the nature of guerrilla warfare, that they'll never be able to really destroy all the weapons or all the tunnels for smuggling in weapons. They'll create even more Palestinians willing to attack Israel in revenge for this war, and the cycle will be perpetuated as a result of this, not come to an end. Do you disagree with that scenario?
It is liberal doctrine that there's no such, ever since Sting, that there's no such thing as a winnable war. I would like to say that, in my opinion, there is such a thing as a winnable war. Israel will certainly win this war because it won't stop until it wins it, and it will define victory as not being obliterated by Hamas. And people who think that there's no such thing as a winnable war don't understand Israel, and they don't understand the what wars can accomplish and what force has to accomplish to prevent aggression.
Well, it is what happened in Lebanon in 2006 a cautionary tale? I've read that Israel hoped to wipe out Hezbollah, but they survived and have now rearmed to a point that's stronger than before the war, from what I've read.
Well, that's
do you believe
right.
that's accurate?
I'm sorry.
Do you believe that's accurate?
Yeah, but I don't think that it's cautionary in the sense that, I mean, what's the caution? Israel waged war stupidly and poorly. The caution there for Israel is to wage war more intelligently and better, which I think is what's happening in Gaza, although I'm not positive yet. And the idea that we're creating, Israel is creating more animosity among Hamas, which is already...
Well, I didn't say among Hamas. The question was among more Palestinians.
Well, I don't know. I think if I were a Palestinian, I might feel some animosity toward Hamas. I might, if I want. I mean, Hamas was actually, after all, was elected by the Palestinians. That was their choice, and they knew what Hamas was about and for. It's in their platform. So, if I elected somebody who wanted to shoot at an enemy that was 10 times or 100 times stronger than me, and I pissed off that enemy so much that the enemy responded with real force, I think I might blame the idiot that started that firing at the enemy in the first place.
20 seconds. What would it take to really stop the smuggling in of weapons to support Hamas by Iran or anybody else? Is Israel going to have to take over the Egypt-Gaza border crossing?
As long as Hamas is determined to smuggle into weapons, Iranian weapons primarily, into its territory, then somebody has to prevent that from happening. There are two good choices. One is to no longer have a government in Gaza which is intent on smuggling in offensive weapons and using them. And the other lesser possibility is that the area where the smuggling takes place has to be controlled either by an international force, or if there is no international force that will do it, then by Israel.
All right. We'll get a Palestinian view next. Zev Chaifetz, former Israeli government official, now a journalist here in New York, author of books including Match Made in Heaven about Israel and the Christian Right. Thank you so much.
And thanks, Brian.
Now, Gaith al-Omari, former peace negotiator for the Palestinian Authority in 2000 and 2001, now with the New America Foundation think tank. Mr. al-Omari, thank you for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
Both Israel and Hamas rejected the UN and Egyptian ceasefire plans. What's Hamas's endgame here? Do they not care, as Zev Chaifetz was just posing the question, if hundreds more Gazans die in these attacks that they're inviting?
Hamas is hoping to achieve political aims vis-a-vis Israel, but also vis-a-vis Egypt and vis-a-vis the Palestinian Authority. Unfortunately, yes, Hamas does not particularly care about civilian casualties. They're using the casualties as a way of improving their own standing and of inflaming the street. And unfortunately, Israel has been obliging by being so indiscriminate in its attacks. So we have a very unholy war here.
What's the morality of what Hamas is doing with respect to the treatment of its own people?
I think there's no morality, but this is absolutely the Hamas modus operandi. Hamas wants to The more casualties that there are, the more anger in the Arab street and the Muslim street against Israel, but also against the West and against Arab governments which are pro-Western, and the more that Hamas and its allies, be it Iran on the Shia side of the Muslim spectrum or be it the Muslim Brotherhood on the Sunni side, they're all benefiting from this.
Why don't the people of Gaza see that and rebel against their government?
When you're under fire, when you're being bombed, you don't tend to think of blaming your own. You blame those who are bombing you. I was in a situation myself when we were under bombardment, and it's very hard not to blame the Israelis. In the heat of the moment, this kind of pressure brings unanimity. And this is why where I think Israel has got it wrong. The more you pressure the people of Gaza, the more that they will identify with Hamas. We have to have a situation where the people of Gaza are given a chance to live a normal life. This will draw a wedge between them and the extremists. Otherwise, there will be continued identification between them and Hamas.
Why isn't there more global condemnation of Hamas the way there's the global condemnation of the war as being waged on the Israeli side, as Zev Chaifetz was describing? There was a six-month ceasefire, which Hamas ended on December 19th. If they thought Israel would retaliate hard like this, if they started lobbing rockets at Israeli towns and cities again across the border to invite this and use their own people in the way that you described, is the world just anti-Israel?
No, I think if you look at the beginning of the crisis, the first few days, there was definitely global, but more interestingly, Arab condemnation of Hamas, or at least lack of support for Hamas. But as the civilian casualties mount, and as we have pictures of babies dying and of UN schools being bombed, it makes it very hard to continue to, in any way criticize Hamas, and all of the criticism will go to Israel. This is what we've been seeing, and unfortunately, Israel, through this arrogance of power, has made not only Hamas more popular, but has made the job of all of us who are trying to reach a more moderate stance, who are trying to mobilize a more moderate street, has made our job much more difficult.
If this was going on with the United States government doing this and inviting attacks and a lot of Americans getting killed, people of the United States would rise up against our government. So it's not just human nature to coalesce around the external enemy.
Yes, and there's also, I would add, there's also a political dimension to it as well. I mean, Israel is approaching an election where public opinion, public pressure becomes more and more important. And as I said, I think Hamas's choice of the time to end the ceasefire was intended to invite this. But one would have hoped that Israel would be more wise in its approach to this. And more importantly also, as we are getting into this violence, the question is, what's the exit? What's the exit strategy? What's next? How are we going to make sure that this is not going to be repeated in the future?
What is the end game here as far as Hamas is trying to play it, do you think?
Hamas, ultimately, I think, wants to take over the Palestinian national movement. This is their ultimate goal. It's a domestic political goal, and they will not stop until they gain that. But we have to keep in mind that Hamas is not acting in isolation. Hamas is also receiving instructions from Iran, which wants an unstable Middle East, receiving instructions from the Muslim Brotherhood, which wants to topple some of the moderate Arab regimes. And it was interesting how Egypt was the first political target, whether by Iran, Hezbollah, the Muslim Brotherhood, Al Jazeera Network. So there is a number of political objectives here. And as far as Hamas is concerned, they want to survive this war. They want to claim some sort of victory. They want to consolidate their power in Gaza and use that as a springboard to take over the rest of the Palestinian national movement.
Well, it doesn't sound like it's really in the interest of Palestinians or in the interest of other Arabs. So why don't other Arab governments coalesce around the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinian Authority / Israeli government peace process, as stalled as it is right now, and more overtly join the effort to isolate, maybe even destroy if necessary, Hamas as a political entity?
I mean, we see some of the more pro-Western Arab, moderate Arab countries doing this, countries like Egypt, Jordan, to some extent Saudi Arabia.
How?
There are other Arab countries, though, which have no interest in doing this. Countries like Syria, which actually are looking at this as a way of actually improving its own bargaining position vis-a-vis the incoming U.S. administration and also vis-a-vis Israel. The problem with coalescing around the peace process, though, is that it has been so discredited. Years and years of talking and no results has made it very hard to publicly justify continuing to support it. So I remember when Israel withdrew from Gaza a couple of years ago, unilaterally, I must add, and they refused any attempt to do it in a negotiated way, Hamas had a very interesting slogan that said, 3 years of resistance beat 10 years of negotiations. The message is, violence pays, negotiations don't. If Hamas can leave this conflict with some political gains, while the peace process continues to be stalled with no deliverables in the West Bank and in the peace process, then we're going to have a more empowered Hamas and will be setting the ground for yet another conflict of this sort in the near future. We have to revive the peace process in a credible way.
Well, you were a Palestinian negotiator at Taba at the end of the Clinton administration, right? When a deal was almost reached, can Israel and the Palestinian Authority go back to the terms of Taba, declare them a deal, and put them to a vote on both sides because they'd say it's the right thing and to marginalize Hamas?
Some more work needs to be done, but I think not much work needs to be done. And yes, this is the only option, to reach a peace deal more or less around the Taba lines with the remaining gaps obviously being bridged. And President Abbas has been very clear. Any deal will have to be put on the for a referendum or for a vote. And I think this is the only way to ultimately dislodge Hamas. Because as the previous speaker, I think, was saying, or I think maybe you were saying that Hamas is, besides being a terrorist organization, it's a political organization. And it can only be weeded out and destroyed if its political platform is discredited. And this can only be done through a peace process. Unfortunately, neither the Palestinians nor the Israelis, given their dysfunctionality at the moment, are capable of reaching it on their own. And we do need a third party, and the only third party that can broker something like this would be the U.S.
Gaith Al-Omari, former peace negotiator for the Palestinian Authority, now with the New America Foundation think tank, are two views of the morality of the Gaza war from Zev Chaifetz and Gaith Al-Omari. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Take a deep breath. Coming up in a minute, the best and worst jobs. Stay tuned.